Before we get going, here's the bit where I remind you that nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets.
You're about to listen to a special preview edition of The Endgame featuring the great Bill Fleckenstein and our very special guest, Le Shrub of Shrubstack.com. Shrub is our second anonymous guest in the last couple of episodes, and this one, like our last episode with Paolo Macro, was an absolute treat. It was cut short, unfortunately, due to time constraints on my side, but Le Shrub has promised to come back and continue the conversation at a later date. Every episode of the Grant Williams podcast, including The Endgame, the Super Terrific Happy Hour, The Narrative Game, This Week in Doom, Shifts Happen, and of course Chaos Theory, is available to Copper and Silver Tier subscribers at my website, grant-williams.com. Copper Tier subscribers get access to all the podcasts, while members of the Silver Tier get both the podcasts and my monthly newsletter, Things That Make You Go, Hmm. So, if you enjoy what you hear on the show and you'd like more high-quality content like it, then please make your way over to grant-williams.com and join our excited community today. And now, on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of The Endgame. Joining me, as always, on our search for whatever the hell happens next is the man himself, Bill Fleckenstein. Hi, mate. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Grant. And yourself?
Very well indeed. Thank you very much. I'm a little bit jet-lagged, but what else is new?
Well, you're a world traveler. That comes with the territory.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I'm also aging in dog years at the moment, unfortunately. Anyway, never mind. Bill, we have a very special guest joining us in 2 seconds. Why don't you tell the good folks out there listening who we're about to talk to?
Well, unfortunately, this is another anonymous guest, but it'll be very entertaining and I think educational, and you might make some money if you process all the stuff that we're going to talk about. So the handle for our gentleman is Shrub. One of the first questions might be, how did you ever come up with that handle?
Oh, so thanks for having me. It's really an honor to be with you guys. Big fan, obviously. So this was during COVID and I was running a portfolio and I was stuck at home and I discovered Twitter. And I was thinking, well, I need to pick something cool. And I thought, well, you know what? A shrub is like a hedge. I was like, well, I'm kind of like a hedge fund manager, so I'm just going to put a shrubbery and the shrubbery capital turned into a shrub. And I'm also a big fan of the Monty Python films.
There you go.
You know, the Knights of Me. So, you know, I became the shrub and, you know, the shrubbery capital turned to the shrub. And then I wanted to make it a bit more artistic. So I'm now Le Shrub.
Now, how did you, just out of curiosity, the last guest we had was Paolo Macro, another quasi-anonymous fellow. How did you two guys become buddies?
So again, through Twitter. So Paolo and I, we interact a lot and, you know, we both have our Substacks. And one day we said, you know, we talk on the phone all the time, so let's just record our conversations. So occasionally we post our conversations on Substack. So Paolo and I have never actually met in real life. We've been basically just interacting on Twitter and we got to know each other from Twitter. And, you know, we exchange phones, we started talking, and you know, hopefully one day we're going to meet as well and have a drink together.
With all the beating on social media, quite rightly so, to all the appalling things it does, there are some incredible benefits, and that's exactly one of them. You know, I've met so many people on social media, particularly Twitter, who've just been incredibly helpful and educational and thought-provoking, and that is the positive aspect of social media.
Absolutely,
for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. For me personally as well, it became, I've been in markets for almost 20 years, and for me, the getting a Twitter handle and having an anonymous account and tweeting, and, you know, I've reached 100,000 followers and then I moved to Substack. Social media is actually now part of my process. So I actually get very good feedback about trends. Also, I get, I use a lot of people as contraindicators. So, you know, I have a list of contraindicators. In the past, it was the Barron's cover, the Economist cover. Now I have a list of people that I can just, you know, they're actually better. They're better contraindicators than some people on Wall Street in a way. So this is how I use social media. I use it a lot in my process as a feedback loop mechanism.
One of the questions that we torture every guest with is about the goings-on in Japan. And I know you've got an opinion about Japan. How long do you think it will be before they're forced to actually raise rates and the process finally begins?
Thank you for that question, Bill, because we are in the Endgame podcast. I had this revelation. I wanted to write a piece in the summer called The Endgame, but you know, since we're here, we might as well talk about it now. So in both our cases, it's not our first rodeo. In the past, it used to be the end game was Japanification of the market. And it was Albert Edwards' Ice Age, if you recall. So, you know, the end game was bond yields are going to go to zero and we're going to have a Ice Age where bonds are the dominant asset class and equities will just trade as badly as they did during Japan after the 90s. Well, the concept of getting to Japanification was correct, I think, but I think they got the wrong Japan because they were all thinking of Japan of the 90s. But I think the end game is probably something like Japan of 2024. I can elaborate on that. Is what is Japan doing? When you have a ton of debt, what's the only two things you can do? The only two things you can do is exhibit fiscal discipline to reduce your debt. Actually, there's three things. It's fiscal discipline, which is really impossible to imagine the US exhibiting fiscal discipline anytime soon. So that's one, fiscal discipline. Number two is default, which again, it's impossible for the US or the EU to default. And the third one is some form of yield curve control, you know, YCC. And the YCC can be explicit, but it's better to be implicit. Japan is doing it now more explicitly, but I think the end game in the rest of the world is probably going to be something more implicit. So Japan is basically, being Japan, it's a perfect excuse to use the word kabuki theater. Because what are they doing? You know, they let the yen explode, go above 150, which suits them absolutely perfectly because they're more competitive on exports. So they devalue their currency by 30% versus the Chinese yuan, for example. So they're more competitive on exports. And they're also eating away their debt by having negative real rates of 2-3%. So, you know, it's quite convenient for a country with the highest debt load in the developed world. Now, I'm kind of amused when a month ago, Yellen went to have a tripartite meeting with Japan and South Korea, where Japan and South Korea were worried about their currency. I'm like, okay, why are you guys worried about your currency? It's part of the kabuki theater. They have to say that they're worried about the currency. And then they do an intervention, which I expected them to be aggressive. And what's the form of the intervention? What are they trying to achieve? Did they try to get the yen at 140? No. What they were trying to do was basically get rid of speculators. They just tried to punish short sellers momentarily, and then they start again. What's the easiest way for the yen to go to 140? They come in one day with an emergency rate hike of 100 bips. I'll tell you where the yen is going to be that day. It's going to be at 140. But why are they not doing it? Because this is the end game, is that they want their negative real rates. You know, they want this to keep going. Why would they get to 140? The only scenario that I see an emergency rate hike is actually if, and I actually had this revelation when you had Paolo on the podcast. The only time I can see this happening is if when Trump gets elected. And he goes around the world and, you know, it's like US versus the rest of the world. And he goes to Japan and say, what are you guys doing? You've been screwing us with that 30% devaluation. You know, those tariffs we put on China, we're going to put those tariffs on you as well. Something like that. And then maybe they control their currency. But this is how I see it. Right now, it's just convenient for them and they're getting away with it because everyone else is focused on China. How does that translate into the US and Europe? I think the end game is they figure out that they have to do something like that eventually, but they have to do it more covertly. Because once people figure it out, then it's a little bit of a problem.
The interesting thing here is, well, a couple of things. First of all, for the idea of Japan doing anything in an emergency fashion, I'm not sure if they'll do it like that because they've got so much room to raise rates. All they need is an agreement with the US that we'll get to 100 basis points or 200 basis points or whatever. And so I don't think they'll want to scare the horses, but I agree with you. I think that's a likely path is higher. The other thing I'd say is that this idea of everybody wanting to go down the Japan route, again, it makes sense. But at the beginning of this, it worked for Japan because they were the only ones doing it. And coming out of it, if they take that route, they'll be the only ones doing it. When everyone else joins in, it becomes problematic. And so for all these guys to try and have a weak currency, for me, there's only one and maybe another thing that they can all do that against, and that's gold. And I think that's why gold is doing what it's doing. Because I think you're absolutely right. Everybody wants and needs a weak currency, but they can't all have it except against some kind of neutral asset. And that, I think, is a big part of what gold's sniffing at.
Absolutely. So that's why what I say, sometimes I might write a piece that's a bit bearish. And towards the end, I always remind people, the real hedge is real assets. And I include platinum, I'm a big bull in platinum, I'm a big bull in commodities in general, because, you know, ultimately, and I agree with you, they can't all do it, but we can't give them too much credit given their past history. So they probably will all do it. So the only real hedge is real assets, because that's why you need to have that exposure. And I agree with you. You need to have that exposure, like hedge funds, you know, they're called hedge funds, okay? What are they trying to hedge? They're all trying to hedge the market. But who's trying to hedge fiscal recklessness and monetary recklessness? Very few of those hedge funds think like that. Most of them are like, oh, I'm going to hedge the NASDAQ. I'm going to hedge S&P. It's like, no, man, you need to hedge fiscal recklessness. You need to hedge currency debasement. You need to have like, I'll say something stupid, but you need to have like $3,000 strike gold calls. That's your hedge in case things go out of control. And you know, that's why my portfolio is very skewed towards any real assets, commodities and cash flowing assets as well.
So your belief is that there's nothing from a domestic policy perspective that would cause the BOJ to raise rates. It will have to be an external catalyst, whether it's versus America or China or something like that. Is that your opinion?
I think to Grant's point, I think Grant hit the nail on the head. The Japanese, they always do things very methodically. So they always telegraph things and they say, and they give you like, just ending the YCC was like watching paint dry. They were like, oh, we're going to do it and we're going to do it. And it took like months and months and months. So that's why when they do raise rates, it will be more methodical, like you say. But what if Trump?
Full conversation is available to subscribers to the copper and silver tiers of my website, grant-williams.com. Nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets.